William Ross Wallace wrote a famous poem in 1865. The title pretty much says it all. The hand that rocks the cradle is the hand that rules the world. So true, isn't it? The impact of motherhood is so beyond a single household and a child, even though that is powerful in and of itself. But the reach is far beyond that. And today, we can cast motherhood in that broad, bold light. We honor the mothers today that have birthed children, that have raised children, and we also honor the mother in all of us, that divine mother as well, the allness of the mother that is with us always. All of that is positively influencing the world, all of that mother energy. Jesus called the mother in the Gospel of Thomas, my mother, the Spirit. Earthly moms have this amazing, miraculous capacity, right, to co-create life, to carry life for 9 months, to birth life, and then to sustain it with their bodies. I mean, that's just the ultimate, isn't it, in what we can do, what we can create together, what we can co-create together. So as dependent creatures, even if you didn't have a mother that was with you every step of the way growing up or didn't show up the ways you wanted to, you had to have had somebody who sustained your life. There was somebody or somebodies, or you wouldn't be here. Right? Because we are these dependent human babies when we come in. And some of us get the opportunity to have that come full circle and then to care for our elderly parents, or even if it's not the very same person, there is some cycle of life of having received, been sustained, and given back in some way. There's a beautiful old story that I feel like encapsulates this. It's about two elephants in the Himalayas. They each had coral feet and coral-colored faces, and so you knew right away that they were related, mother and son. And the little baby elephant would follow his mother everywhere she went. She had a habit of reaching high into the tall trees to get the very tenderest of the leaves and the sweetest of mangoes for her son. And she would give them to him with her trunk and say, first you, then me. They lived near a lotus pond, and then after they had breakfast, she would take her trunk and draw up a bunch of sparkling water, and she would spray it out on his head and down his back until he shone. And then he would pick up some water in his trunk, and he'd squirt it right between mom's eyes, and the play was on. And they would play back and forth, splashing in this pond, and then they'd lie in the muck and wrap their trunks together and rest. Later in the afternoon, the mother would take a place under a shady tree while her son frolicked with the baby elephants. And he grew and grew stronger and taller until he was the largest bull in the herd. And as he grew taller and stronger, his mother grew older and older. Her tusks became yellowed and broken, and she became blind. And so the son would reach high into the trees and pick the tenderest of leaves and the sweetest of mangoes, and he would say, first you, then me. And he would draw up in his trunk the sparkling water, and he'd spray her head and down her back until it shone. And then he would lead his blind mother to a shady spot after they lay in the muck and wrapped their trunks together so that she could rest while he ran off with the other elephants. One day the king spotted this glorious young bull and said, I must have that elephant and ride it. So he brought it back to the grounds of his palace. He had him captured. And he arrayed this elephant with a garland of silks and flowers and, you know, truly a royal elephant. He gave him the sweetest of plums and clear sparkling water in his trough. But the young bull would not eat or drink, and he grew thinner and weaker as time passed. And the king said, I've given you everything. I don't understand why you're not thriving, you're not eating and drinking. He said, I cannot eat and drink because my blind mother is out there in the forest and she needs food and she needs water. And so the king was so moved by the kindness and compassion and love of the young bull that he let him go, and he ran back to his mother where he found her laying in the muck near the pool. And he began to pull the water in his trunk and spray it on her. And she said, is it raining or has my son returned to me? And miraculously, her eyes were healed. And then he reached into the tall trees and he got some tender leaves and the sweetest of mangoes. And he gave it to his mother and said, first you, then me. The full cycle of life is a beautiful thing, isn't it? This is a near and dear story to my heart right now because I'm caring for my mother right now, and she doesn't need a ton of care, but she does sometimes need some care. And so it does feel very much like this cycle, and some of you can relate to that, having cared for elderly parents or in some way caring for another. How beautiful that is when the giving and the receiving returns. And as I said, it doesn't always have to be the same person, but just the ability for us to give in the way that we have been given to share the love, to know that mother ethic of love, first you, then me. So regardless of the ways that we show up and as as people that give of ourselves, we can all think of ourselves, even if you've never thought of yourself before, as a mother, as mothers just today, as we are embodying this energy that is mother, this action of what is motherhood. I've been watching this TV show called The Fosters. Has anybody seen The Fosters? Oh, a couple of you have. Oh, good. So anyway, in the show, it's a married couple, Steph and Lena, and they have a biological son, two adopted children, and two foster children that they're considering adopting. They're all teenagers. And so every episode, there's like a ton of things that go on, as you could imagine. You know, in one particular episode, it's like one kid's going to get expelled. Another kid's got this big presentation at school. Somebody has an accident. Steph has just lost her father, just made his transition. She's a police officer and just got shot on the job, so she's recovering. And it's like you think, like, a person can only take so much, right? One more thing, and the, you know, that's going to be the straw that broke the camel's back. And she discovers that her wife, Lena, is trying to get pregnant. And she says, oh my, you know. And so it's that kind of knowing, like, how much can somebody take? Well, look to the mothers, and you'll see. There's a lot of endurance, a lot of resilience in the human spirit. And we can, and through recognizing motherhood as spiritual practice and bringing spiritual practice into it to sustain us is what is key. I've heard a lot of mothers say that every child is like a heart that is living outside of your body. Have you ever heard of that description? I mean, that is descriptive, isn't it? It's like, well, knowing that sense of vulnerability, right? That you cannot fully protect this little being, this heart that is outside of your body. To have that big love, that raw love, that vulnerable love, and to just do the best you can to surrender it, to let go, to give it over to the one, to trust, to stand in faith and hope. That's all we ever can do. And those are all parts of our spiritual practices. So our part is to sow the seeds, right, for the future generation as best we can. And trust in their innate ability, in their innate wisdom, to let that guide them to grow into the loving adults and leaders that we need in our world. So my godson's mother was checking in with him the other day. She was at the doorway of his bedroom, and as she appeared, he slammed down the laptop lid. She says, what were you watching? And he said, nothing, and he started turning red. And she said, really? It doesn't look like nothing. And she was in her mind thinking about this kid who'd been showing porn in the lunchroom at his school and just gotten in trouble. So he very sheepishly opens his laptop, and the video that begins to play is How to Plant Potatoes. He's a little gardener and hopeful farmer. And he's invested, you know. He has little, he has these packets of seeds wrapped in moist paper towels that he keeps on the heating vents. And she said he's constantly checking the temperature to make sure they stay at the optimum 75 degrees. He's just completely into this. Wholesome, that's the word that comes to mind. Wholesome is a word that my mom used to say. You know, we're Midwesterners. That was a big word in the Midwest, especially when I was growing up. And I think she would point out people she considered wholesome and like kind of lift them up on a pedestal, in part to just sort of let me know an example of the kind of friend you might make or the kind of person you might date, right? Just kind of sprinkle wholesome everywhere. Now, in my teenage mind, wholesome then translated to boring. But today, this is incredible. The teenagers of today actually embrace wholesome. Wholesome is a compliment. Wholesome is a value held by Generation Z, which is 11 to 26-year-olds today. Isn't that hopeful? Yeah. So this was an article in the New York Times this week that talked about this. They said there are 3 million followers on Twitter of a thing called Wholesome Memes, and Wholesome Games on TikTok has over 300,000 followers. Some of the Gen Z members describe Wholesome as protecting your peace, as being kind to others and having positive outlook on life. All right, you guys. I see some of our Gen Zers in the audience. Thank you for being with us, bringing your wholesome selves into the world and to unity. So children are our teachers too, aren't they? It doesn't always go the direction that we think of adults being the adults in the room. Often it's the children that lead the way and teach us. And one of the ways that we cultivate our future together is to use words, to choose our words wisely because they have such co-creative power and impact. So what we say and how we say it can break a young heart. What we say and how we say it can make or break a relationship with a coworker or a friend. And what we say and how we say it makes a difference everywhere we go in the world, wherever we show up. It also has an effect on our well-being. Charles Fillmore, co-founder of Unity, and some of you may not know, his second wife, Cora Fillmore, wrote the book Teach Us to Pray Together, and they said, just as the farmer selects the very best seed corn for planting, so we must choose the words that will bring forth the rich harvest of plenty. So do you want to be a sower of seeds of shame and mistrust and faith and judgment? Or do you want to be a sower of seeds of love and compassion and wholesomeness and kindness? The choice is always ours, to be mindful of what we say and how it impacts others. The seed words that we plant, water, and feed are precious. It's how we midwife and how we mother life and make a difference in the world. So one of my favorite images by Bruce Harmon is one that's going to be on the screen in a moment, and it's also back here if you can see it better. And this water of life is Kuan Yin in the middle, the goddess of compassion, pouring from her vessel of compassion into the cups of young Jesus and young Buddha. It's set back in time as she waters the seeds of the future with compassion. And set back in time had to predate 2,500 years ago or more, right? So these spiritual masters that we still follow, that we still talk about as exemplars and way showers and people who showed us the way to, in the case of the Buddha, how to become enlightened through the power of meditation. In the case of Jesus, the healings and the teachings and the much of what we talk about in New Thought today comes from that spiritual master. And so just think about the love and compassion that you pour out, that it may be impacting a future spiritual master. One who can shape lives for thousands of years. Sometimes I think of my godson as a little Buddha, a Christ-like figure. And I bet you have young ones in your life that you think of that way too. Keep thinking of them in that way. Keep seeing them in that way, holding that vision for them. Not of perfection, not that they can't make mistakes, I don't mean that, but just holding the possibility, the potentiality of who they are. And as you begin to practice that with young people, then begin to practice it with all people. That's our second principle, right? I am divine, but it's in action. It is a seeing it, a knowing it, a speaking it, a beholding it, an uplifting of that kind of energy. Bruce writes about this piece of art that he created. He says, before stories and holy men, mothers were. Before minds were shaped by books, women gave life. In the shadows, he says, the divine feminine has endured, and someday to step forth when evolution has filled its course. I believe that time is now. We see it, and then it may feel like, as the Baptists say, backsliding. But it's all part of the process, right, of awakening. It's all part of the process of awakening, bringing forth the divine feminine so that she can be within us in partnership with the divine masculine. So bringing forth that wholeness is what restores the harmony, the love, the peace on the planet and in our lives. And so that's the work that we are really up to when we step into this idea of spiritual motherhood. So embodying this mother love is not just about soft love, which we often think of, right? Gentleness, nurturance. But it's also that fierce love, the powerful love, the transformative love that is also a part of this idea of mother love. The social and emotional researcher Brené Brown says, to live a love ethic looks like real love. She said, it's not rainbow, unicorn, commercialized love. It's gritty, dangerous, wild-eyed, justice-seeking love. Yeah. Being spiritual love in the world, then, is a brave act. To step into this, it takes some bravery. It involves showing up in our relationships with youngers and elders and peers, vulnerable, open, willing to forgive, willing to atone, willing to apologize, as so beautifully shared in Ted's story today. Just loved your story. It was just such a beautiful demonstration of how we can walk that path, no matter our age. Our willingness to take the higher road and be the presence of love can be really profound. Mother Myrtle, as we sometimes call her, the co-founder of Unity, said that one joyful presence in a home will drive out every grumble. One peaceful presence will clear the house of discord. One presence of content will banish the specter of unrest. And of course, it's not limited to our homes. It's taking that out into our workplace, being the presence of love and the presence of peace where we serve, where we volunteer, where we shop, where we travel, everywhere, in other words, carrying that kind of divine alignment with the heart of the mother, being that wherever we go. And Mother Myrtle adds that to the one who has joy shall be added joy. To the one who has peace shall be added peace. It's important to recognize when we take all this on as parents or mentors in the world that we're not alone, that we can always call forth help, and help will always arrive in the form of divine guidance. It will also arrive in the form, as we learned last week from Michelle Chikala's journey to the ancestors, it can come in the form of ancestral support. The grandmothers are always with us. When I did the journey with Michelle last week, my grandmothers showed up. Maybe yours did too. But the grandmothers, the collective grandmothers, they're always with us. The grandmothers, did you know, were with us at the birth of our nation. The Iroquois government was run in part by clan mothers, and the founding fathers of our country were influenced by that government in the ideals of democracy that were created during that time. The clan mothers had the power to instate a chief, to select the chief, and had the power to remove the chief if he wasn't accessing wisdom and serving the people. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of dreaming about a council of clan mothers who can keep us on the up and up, you know what I mean? And so it is this idea, if we had that kind of council, that we could help ourselves be the best that we have come here to be. And you know, history repeats itself, so it is possible. We can hold those visions and at the same time recognize that nobody else is going to swoop in and save us, that we are the mothers and we are the grandmothers who have a voice, who have a heart, who have hands and eyes that can bring forth the love that can change the world. And so, if not us, as we say, then who? And if not now, then when? So let's access the ways, assess for ourselves the ways that we show up in our relationships, how we show up, how we speak and listen and act in our relationships, all of our relationships. And let's carry forth the good from the mothers and the mentors that we have received in our lifetimes and extend that, knowing that we will do even greater things than they have done for ourselves, for Mother Earth, and for each other. Today's council of 13 grandmothers around the world, the 13 indigenous grandmothers, come together periodically, and they have written statements that they give to the world. They do ceremony together. And one of the things they said, this is an excerpt of something they said that your ancestors from long ago knew the power of feminine principle. And because you carry their DNA in your body, this wisdom, this way of being is within you. Call on it, they say. Call it up. Invite your ancestors in. As the yang-based habits and the decaying institutions on our planet begin to crumble, they say, look up. A breeze is stirring. Feel the sun on your wings. First you, then me. That's the love ethic of the mother. It's that kind of humility, that kind of compassion, that kind of love, that kind of willingness to serve that we're called into when we step fully into spiritual motherhood. We are Holy Mother. And so let's exemplify that, that love, that compassion, and that wholesomeness. I invite you to speak this affirmation with me. Together, I am Holy Mother. I exemplify love, compassion, and wholesomeness. And so you do, and so it is. Happy Mother's Day.